You're listening to Blast Processing, the official podcast of all things video gaming, gadget, and gear related on DVDverdict.com. On this week's episode, Steve goes spelunking, John moves like a ninja and cuts like steel, and Kevin runs faster, jumps farther, and crouches deeper than ever before. Hello, you are listening to Blast Processing, the official podcast of all things video gaming,
gadget,
and gear related
on DVDverdict.com.
That was awesome. Can we do it that way every time?
I told you guys if we practiced that shit, it'd be like so flawed.
You're listening to Blast Processing, the official podcast of all things video game, gadget,
gear related.
Okay, let's stop.
That's good.
Let's leave it at that.
Okay.
It's been 2 or 3 weeks because of illnesses and schedules and whatnot, but we're back.
I caught Captain Trips.
Then he had to go and, like, go on a big United States-wide odyssey or something. And
set a hobo on fire.
Yeah.
I can't
remember. Kept on saying that M-O-O-N spells different things and...
It does.
M-O-N. That spells friendship.
It also spells video games, which is what we're here to talk about today.
That's right.
We got
some big news to talk about, of course, that everybody's aware of now because, you know, we were late to the party. But before we get to all of that, we're going to start off with Tomb Raider.
Tomb Raider is back.
Tomb Raider is back.
I haven't even seen it yet.
Oh.
I should have at least looked at it before we started.
You should have. I agree. We should have.
Now we're going to be describing all this awesome stuff, and you're going to feel left out.
At any rate, you know, the first trailer hit, it was E3 last year, I believe. It did kind of come out of nowhere. There wasn't really a whole lot of talk about anything Tomb Raider related, and then we see this trailer, and it was like, holy crap, that's awesome. Well, the game is here, and as a complete, another, ground zero reboot of Tomb Raider, it's awesome. It is absolutely fan-freaking-tastic.
I can't wait to play it. I think this may be a game that I may pick up in the next little while.
I think it is a must-purchase.
Yeah.
I'm maybe 5, maybe 6 hours in now. I've been at it a while. First observations, gameplay, graphics, and stuff are absolutely phenomenal. Beautiful looking game, really, really nice. Up there with, you know, upper echelon for this generation. The gameplay is just, in a word, splendid.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely superb. Really, really good. Lara controls extremely well. Animations and stuff are really, really intuitive. Like, it kind of gives you the proper feedback for all the controls, you know, for your controller inputs and stuff. It feels absolutely fantastic. The closest comparison I can think of would be Uncharted. But I'm going to say it now. After the amount of time that I've put into Tomb Raider and the way the story's been developing up to this point, it's better than Uncharted.
Yeah?
It is.
Okay.
Lara is an extremely, like, really well-represented character. Really well done. You get right into it, you know? Like, the game has this awesome way of pulling you in. And there's almost more of like an emotional payoff than with the Uncharted games. I mean, the Uncharted games are great. They're amazing games. They're fantastic. I mean, as far as action-adventure games go, fantastic games.
But again, you're playing as Indiana Jones.
You're playing as Indiana Jones. You know, Indiana Jones crossed with James Bond.
Yeah.
You know, and they're great games. They are amazing games. But what Tomb Raider has that Uncharted doesn't have is, I think, a human element. A bit of human appeal. You know, like Lara is just a 21-year-old girl who survives a particularly nasty shipwreck.
And actually, I really like that because, I mean, just starting out, Lara Croft was always, you know, a set of jubblies and a saucy British accent.
Yes, she was.
You know, she had her cool John Lennon sunglasses.
Her short shorts. And,
yeah. And, I mean, but you always heard, I believe it might have even been in the instruction book for the very first game, you always heard about this girl surviving this horrible plane crash or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and...
Which, actually, they did allude to in Legend, Tomb Raider Legend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, they went back and they decided to craft the entire game around that character growth.
And like, this is not, some people have been kind of trumpeting it as a prequel, you know, as like, this is the girl who would become the woman you see in the other Tomb Raider games. No, let's just get that out of the way right up front. This is a Ground Zero reboot. Mm-hmm. This is a complete reimagining of the character of Lara Croft.
And it's exactly what Lara Croft needed.
It was. Yeah. It was. And, you know, it feels so captivating to play. Like, it's one of those games that you pick up the controller and it just propels you forward. You know, like, you don't want to stop playing. And there aren't many games out there like that. Even Assassin's Creed 3, as much as I love Assassin's Creed 3. You know, there were times I was like, yeah, I've had enough of this for the week, and I put the controller down and I moved on to something else, and then I came back to it, you know? But Tomb Raider, it's all I can think about playing through right now, because yeah. I really want to see what's around the next corner and how they deal with the next problem, you know?
And see, Dead Space was like that for me.
And that's another good
example. Darkstalkers as well.
Yeah.
Darksiders.
Darksiders. Yeah.
Yeah, Darksiders the same way. I remember playing that in like 3 days. It's like straight.
And Tomb Raider is that kind of game.
Okay.
It really is. I was really, really enjoying it. I thought it was a great game. And then I got to this one sequence where I had to climb an old rusted World War II era radio tower to send out an SOS signal on, like, the international emergency frequency kind of thing. And, you know, you're a couple of hundred feet above snow-capped peaks looking down over this island in the Asian Pacific. And when you get to the top and you actually have to manually tune in the radio frequencies and then you send your SOS... And then someone actually responds. I wanted to jump off the couch. I was just like, oh my God, I got to do it! You know, awesome. It was that kind of, like, the feeling of elation and relief when you hear someone else respond to the SOS and stuff. And it was just like, for a game to stir those kind of feelings, and you know, instead of just being like, okay, on to the next objective, yeah. You know, it's been an absolutely fantastic ride so far. Great controls, great upgrade system, the way the weapon system works, the way skill unlocks work and stuff like that. Really, really, really well done. All the perks and stuff that you get in the game, you basically have three tiers. You have Brawler, Hunter, and Survivor. And as you buy perks in each of those, like it ups, like Survivor ups like the salvage you find and stuff like that, whereas then Hunter makes you more efficient with weapons and that sort of thing. Brawler makes you more efficient in melee combat, and each one has abilities that you unlock.
Wow, but so that's got a bit of RPG element.
Oh, yeah, and it's tech trees as such, but it's handled in a really logical fashion. Like, it's done really well. It doesn't feel particularly gamey.
Right.
And, the action and the platforming aspects of it are paced perfectly. You know, the game gives you a good chunk of platforming. It's kind of like Uncharted that way, how Uncharted kind of mixed it up. But there were a lot of times, particularly with Uncharted 3, that I get to a point where, okay, I'm done shooting now. Please let me stop shooting. Yeah. Please let me stop shooting now. And
then Please let me stop dying.
Yeah, and then you move to the next area. It's like, oh, great, more gunfights. You know? And with Tomb Raider, all the pacing is absolutely perfect. They give you a lot of platforming to do with none of the really stupid puzzles.
Right.
All the puzzles are, like, logical puzzles. There's none of this matching up symbols or pushing boxes around. It's all, you know, like, it's more logically implemented into the game itself. The level design is just stunningly well done. And, like, you know, you get your decent amount of platforming time in. And so when a gunfight does break out, it doesn't interrupt the flow. And then it doesn't last so long that you start getting fed up with shooting people.
Right.
You know, it's just, man, it's a great game. Right now, it's easily, I mean, I know it's only March, we're only into month three, but so far, definitely a strong contender for Game of the Year.
How does the leveling up aspect of it work? Is it based on experience points, or are you getting items to do it?
It's based on a combination of experience that you gain from, like, hunting animals and skinning them and stuff like that.
Oh, I see.
Now, it's not as in-depth as, like, Assassin's Creed, where you see the skinning and all of this stuff. The way Tomb Raider works basically is, like, you can shoot a deer, for example, with the bow, and when you go up to it, it just prompts you to hit the X button, and when you do, you automatically get that XP.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing.
So,
right?
Like, cutting herbs and berries and everything down,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And the salvage comes from, like, killing bad guys and crates and stuff in the environment, and basically, your salvage is what you use to upgrade your gear. And then your experience is what you use to upgrade your character.
Oh, okay.
So it's really well implemented. It all makes sense.
What I love, though, is as you're upgrading the gear with salvage, when you look at it on the menu screen, you see all the junk and shit she's got tied to it.
Yeah, like I upgraded my bow, and one of the upgrades for the bow was a key ring that she wires into the string on the end of the bow.
Yeah.
So you can pull the key ring back right. to knock an arrow, which was really cool. Really,
first
really
time
cool.
You... upgrade the pry axe. I forget what she's got.
Oh, the first time it's just a stick with a knife blade in it.
Yeah.
And then she gets, like, a hunting pick. Or a hiking pick, sorry. And then, like, when she gets the third tier one, it's, like, the big, heavy, like, mountaineering axe. You know?
Cool.
Great game. Two thumbs up from me. Not only, you know, one of the best games. Like, well, I mean, yeah, so far, like I said, strong contender game of the year. But I think, like, you know, we're nearing the end of a console life cycle now.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be this generation's Shadow of the Colossus. You know, this is going to be this generation's really, you know, accomplished game. That came kind of late in the life cycle, that sort of thing, right?
I also absolutely love, and this is always a bonus to me, a lot of great world building in there.
Yeah.
Journals and such. And when you sit down at base camp and she starts writing...
In her journal,
in her journal.
It's kind of how you can tell how far along you are, and I've got like 5 out of 10 Lara Croft entries now. So, but yeah, it's... And all the unlockable stuff is great. Like, you, instead of just finding, like, trinkets and stuff like this, you know, and you do have your GPS points, which is, you know, your just basic check marks, but everything else is relics that you can then go in and look at and examine and actually unlock more info from.
Oh, okay.
Or journal entries from different eras and stuff, like right back to this.
Yeah, the first thing I found was a Japanese gnome mask.
Yeah,
and
it's,
I just spun it around, and all of a sudden her voice comes back in and says, there's residue of white paint on the inside of this mask.
Inside of the mask.
Whoever had worn this must have been of noble birth.
Yeah. Like, that kind of stuff. And, like, you see the archaeology and stuff in it. Like, you really see it. And, like, the whole what they're looking for is really cool. Like, this mythological Japanese princess who basically separated from the rest of Japan and formed her own little empire on an uncharted island that was called Yamatai.
Cool.
And I don't know how much of it is based on fact or if it's all just fabricated for the game.
Right,
I couldn't tell you. But the way, like, the history of Yamatai is unfolding through the journals that you read is really, really freaking cool.
You know.
And
he already had me sold at the No Mask.
Well, I mean, besides that, you'll find, well, you find stuff like from different periods of Japanese history. You've got the No Mask. You'll find stuff from the Edo period. Then you'll find World War II stuff from the Japanese side or U.S. Marine Corps.
Yeah.
Stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's all throughout history, there's been so many things that have crash landed onto this island.
It's surrounded by these just freak storms that come out of nowhere. And, I mean, of course, this is how the game opens. Your ship gets destroyed in a storm, right? And your crew, most of the crew is dead. Some of your, like, the main, your key characters are all on the island. You're in constant contact with them over radio. But, like, these humans on the island are all, like, shipwreck survivors and stuff like that have basically started a cult that worships this sun priestess. They call them the Solari.
What is it? Himiko, wasn't it?
Himiko, yeah. Himiko, the sun priestess or sun queen.
Cool.
Yeah, but it's really, really freaking cool. What a great game.
I'm into that.
Mm-hmm. It's, it's a just absolutely still. I think I'm about an hour and a half, 2 hours into it. Something I really liked about it, too. And this is just a, it's very minor, but it's, you know, something you really noted this past gaming generation. Tomb Raider doesn't assail you with, like, I'm 2 hours in, I don't think I've seen a trophy yet. Right? It's not constantly assailing you with, you're playing a video game.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And it doesn't, like, it never feels like you're ticking off objectives.
Yeah.
It's always, you know, you're moving through it. Like, I mean, it is essentially linear, but now it's gotten to a point where I'm actually backtracking. I'm actually going back through and finding items and stuff like this, you know? Like, I'm after...
With your upgraded Metroid equipment.
Yeah. I've gone back using, like, the rope dart and stuff like this to climb and...
Cool.
You know... collect journal entries that I missed the first time around and stuff like that. Because I'm so into it that I want to find this stuff.
Nice.
And I only want to find it to read it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to find it to
get it
to check it off.
To score Chivos.
Yeah, I'm genuinely intrigued by the backstory, right? It's great.
Cool.
So yeah, anyone out there who's been wondering, you know, is Tomb Raider worth my money? It is.
Very much so.
Another mark on Square's axe handle. Their West Direction protocol seems to be working.
Yep. Well, I mean, now we've had Deus Ex Human Revolution. We've had Sleeping Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
We've had Hitman Absolution. And we've got Tomb Raider. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they're batting 1,000 right now.
Yeah.
Bring on the Nosgoth, baby. Moving on. Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
Revengeance!
Vengeance gets revenge.
That's the stupidest name.
I went back and I looked at the old trailer. It was actually Revenge with a Vengeance.
Revenge with a Vengeance?
Yeah, a couple years ago at the Spike VGAs aired that trailer, and myself and Steve and Mr. Dobbin, I don't think we stopped laughing for like 11 minutes.
Revenge with a vengeance.
Vengeance gets revenge with a vengeance. So,
this well, time we revenge vengeance.
Metal Gear. I'd like to say what a long and storied development cycle, but it's more like just this crazy long period of meh.
I think it was more of a situation of Kojima didn't know what to do with it. Like,
yeah, okay, let's just start off. What was it, E3 2009, I think? They showed it off. It was just as Kinect had. It was the year they Microsoft first showed off Kinect.
2010.
And I don't think Kinect even had its name at that point.
No.
It was still going by its whatever. I forget what its code name was.
Natal, wasn't it?
Yeah, Project Natal.
That's right. Yeah.
Do you care about it? Natal. But anyway, they showed off this, you know, this demo of Raiden carefully slicing up watermelon. And it's like, yeah, that's great, but how are you going to make a game out of that? And then nobody heard anything about it until the Spike VGAs in 2011 when this new trailer launched. And apparently what had happened is Kojima took a look at it, realized they didn't have a game, and quietly canceled it. And then one day had a chance meeting with one of the creative directors at Platinum Games. And this guy asked, so, you know, I was really interested in Metal Gear Solid Rising. Whatever happened to that game? And Kojima was like, oh, yeah, we shit-canned that, but you can have it if you want it. So anyway, we ended up with a crazy robot ninja action game in the hands of the guys who made Vanquish.
And Bayonetta.
Now, I asked a question about Bayonetta a long time ago. Bayonetta's combat is fucking amazing. But, you know, you got that stupid character design and, you know, the level design just honks on Bobo.
Yeah, like, it was inherent weirdness.
Yeah, just, and, you know, inherent weirdness mixed with that whole original Devil May Cry styling where it's all corridors and monster arenas, right?
Yeah.
You know, the same stuff we rip on Castlevania for, but nothing else. And, so, I bought it, because, you know, I'm a sucker for Metal Gear. I think, actually, most of us are. Kevin, are you a sucker for Metal Gear?
Metal Gear. I was a sucker for the first couple of Metal Gears.
Yeah.
And then I bought the last one and played a little bit of it, but didn't play much more of it.
Guns of the Patriots.
Yes. Guns of the Patriots is awesome.
It is.
Yeah. You know what? I was going to say this question to the fish, but I'm going to say right now. Do you think we are ready for a Metal Gear reboot? Do you think it's time?
Actually, I've been saying no, because I like the storyline. Right. I'm getting off topic now a little bit, so I'll get back to cutting up people in a minute. But no, I like Metal Gear's mythology, and I love how, you know, it really does all tie together. And in Guns of the Patriots, it's just drawn together masterfully. Everything right from that very first Metal Gear game all fits in there. I don't think it's time for a reboot. I think it's time for a remake of those first two Metal Gear games.
That'd be cool. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I'd like
that. Now, that said, you know what? In the right hands, I mean, i.e. not Kojima's.
Yeah.
I'd actually...
In the hands of somebody sane.
Yeah, I actually wouldn't mind. I mean, we're speaking blasphemy, but who cares?
Yeah.
You know what? There's nothing wrong with blasphemy.
We're blasphemers.
We are blasphemers. But I think a Metal Gear remake in the right hands would actually be pretty awesome.
I'm just thinking because the Tomb Raider one, great.
Yeah.
Reboot. If there was a game came out, you know, 2 years' time, just called Metal Gear.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be exciting?
You know what? And I mean, you could... Because, I mean, we got all this great stuff out there. You know, Ghost Recon, Future Soldier, awesome. Most of the Tom Clancy games are good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you just take that and add in just a little bit of... Because Metal Gear's got just that little bit of fringe science to it, right?
Metal Gear's got that just that hint of cyberpunk.
Yeah, the black technology. We're on the bleeding edge of something here, right?
Yeah.
But it's hidden from the eyes of the world.
Yeah.
Right? You add that little bit of stuff to the really cool... Tom Clancy style espionage setting, right? You could have something good there.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, and like, I'm not even one of these guys who thinks there's anything wrong with what's come before. Because they're like, I mean, for me, the arc from Metal Gear Solid to Metal Gear Solid 4 was absolutely phenomenal, and the way 4 drew everything together and closed it.
The last,
you know,
I don't even know if you call it a boss fight because the thing goes on for nearly an hour. But that last sequence between. Snake and Liquid Ocelot.
Oh, it was incredible.
Well, dude, I had tears in my eyes by the end of it.
Incredible.
Tears in my eyes.
Absolutely incredible. But yeah, you know what? I wouldn't mind seeing someone revisit, like, you know, reboot. Take a young Solid Snake and, you know, change up the setting a little bit, change up the world a little bit to match with, like, the changing trends in video game design and stuff, which I thought Metal Gear Solid 4 adapted pretty well to.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, just make a few little nips and tucks and stuff like that and create something a little different. You know, I'm not against the idea at all.
Yeah.
Especially not with the next generation.
That's how we got Metal Gear Solid.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's right.
Yeah.
And now getting back to Rising, it's actually pretty good.
I think it's better than pretty good.
It's anytime the sword is in your hand and you're cutting people up, it is phenomenal.
Yeah.
The action in this game just, you know, I went on, last episode, I went on and on and on about Devil May Cry. It's crazy how satisfying it is knocking a guy airborne in a combo and then, you know, doing the whole slowdown time and slice him into six pieces.
I like how the slicing, like the, what is it, Zaibatsu or whatever they call it?
No, the Zaibatsu is a corporation.
Something, Hibachi mode or something.
Yeah, no,
Kawasaki.
Kawasaki mode.
Okay, when Raiden goes Cuisinart.
Yeah, the Yami mode. But yeah, the way they got it implemented is pretty cool. And
I do something. They added something too that I really like because I was really worried about that whole using the sticks thing.
Yep.
I love how you can actually just alternate between the two hard and strong attacks to do vertical and horizontal slashes.
Yeah, and my biggest issue with it is at times when it's used, it does tend to interrupt the flow of the gameplay.
The first boss fight with Blade Wolf.
Yeah, that's an issue for me. Like it does like. It's nice to have the feature there, but you don't do it in for the sake of gameplay.
No,
and it feels to me like something that's still kind of just a little bit tacked down there because those first demos they showed used it. You know, like but it was supposed to be powered by Kinect, et cetera, et cetera. And I think like that kind of hurts the game a little.
I do love it when it's used for because they're not really boss fights, but when you're fighting the bigger mech type enemies.
Yeah, yeah.
When you KO a guy. You've got the opportunity to do it, but there's one enemy I was fighting down the sewers. It was kind of like one of those bugs that skits on a water surface.
Yeah.
Only, you know, 10 feet tall. I had mechanical legs and had flamethrowers rigged all over it. So anyway, Raiden's after tying two of the legs together, sliding underneath it, and then he, kind of jumps and comes up right behind it. And it just sees it in midair. You can either just keep attacking or... If you hold the button to go into Yami mode, you know, you can do something like really cool, like slice a thing completely down the center and just end the fight right there.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, like, all this goodness is when he's got the sword in his hand. When you're running around empty levels.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you're dealing with the story, because I mean, the codec conversations and everything, it's optional, but it's all still there. And I am a sucker for that stuff. But, I don't know, maybe it's just not hearing the wonderful cadence of David Hayter's voice going over the technobabble bullshit.
A lot of it too, man. Like, the last few Metal Gears, particularly the last 2, 3, and 4,
yeah,
the codec conversations were a little winded and were also a little nonsensical. They were a little foolish.
Yeah, and this follows. And some of the characters, you know, you've got your tech specialist, codenamed Doctor. Is he talks with that wonderful German accent I always make fun of.
Yeah.
You know, the guy talks like Dr. Ludwig von Drake. And be sure to bring back the right arm to me, Raiden, and I have been authorized to promise you goodies. Yeah, and then you save a street urchin in the second level, and it's not enough that he's a street urchin, but he's got to talk in some sort of Brazilian Creole that they actually have to subtitle him so you can understand what he's saying. He. I'm serious. The kid sounds like Jar Jar Binks with a Spanish accent.
And see, it's like
or Portuguese. Sorry, Portuguese.
This to me is this is the Kojima touches.
Yeah, it's
this
the it's the weirdness,
the off the wallness
for the sake of it.
Yeah, and some people, you know, say that that's a part of what makes Metal Gear Metal Gear, and I call bullshit on that. Metal Gear Solid and Metal Gear Solid 2 didn't have any of this inherent weirdness.
No, games my favorite Metal Gear memories are stuff like See You in Hell, Liquid, and. Snakes don't belong in Alaska.
Yeah.
This is Raven Terror. And then you hear the treads of the tank crunching over the snow, right?
And I mean, look, it seems to be, I don't know if it's just Kojima or what. I don't know if he really is that eccentric or what. But the series has never really hit that prime that it had with the original Metal Gear Solid. Like, that original game was just such a freaking...
My parents got me that. It's one of the only times during my well, I can't even call it my childhood. I think I was a teenager when I was probably 15 or 16 when that game came out. But my parents were always absolutely horrible with video games as Christmas gifts.
Yeah.
It was always, you know, the stuff that was on sale at Piper's or Canadian Tire.
Huh.
So, you know, I was a Cobra Triangle kid. And,
poor bastard.
No, I got Metal Gear Solid, and, because Sears, during a couple years here in the city, had their Funtronics section there, right?
Yep.
And Mom could go in and talk to the younger guys they had hired working in there, and these are the ones who knew, would be able to steer her into, what games I'd like.
Yeah.
Instead of just asking me. No, I got Metal Gear Solid. That first Metal Gear Solid, I played through in 2 days. Blew through it. Loved it.
I did it in a weekend.
Yeah, just, it was...
Yeah. But it was a phenomenal game. I mean, it was... Writing-wise, dialogue-wise, action sequences, boss fights, and that's something that no other game I've played since has really managed to nail the magnitude of the boss fights in Metal Gear.
And they're also different. It might be something like one boss fight, okay, everyone always brings up Psycho Mantis. Psycho Mantis boss fight, phenomenal.
Excellent.
Absolutely phenomenal. But I mean, there's so much other great stuff in there. It might be something as simple as the sniper battle with Wolf.
Amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
Or, I mean, being stocked around in the storage freezer by Raven.
Yeah.
And you got this guy who... What is it? You got to use the remote control rockets to sneak up on him, because if he rounds a corner at sea, you're just opening up on you with that big
minigun
he's carrying around, right? Every boss fight, it had its own theme, and just... They were huge set pieces.
Yeah.
For a PS1 era game, but I can still go back and enjoy them.
I still play Twin Snakes. I try to break it out at least once a year and go through Twin Snakes. And I mean, I love the game. It's a classic. But Rising is not.
No.
You know, Rising's a fun game. It's gorgeous looking. Great. Very pretty.
And when it plays fast and loose, when it gets crazy, like, I mean, the very first opening level of the game, you cut five guys down and then Metal Gear Ray shows up.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, okay, that's how you know you're playing a platinum game. You've killed five, it's just like Vanquish, you know, you've killed five or six guys, now here's a robot the size of a building.
Yeah.
Have fun with that. But I mean, it has trouble keeping that pace.
Yeah. On its own, it's a solid little game, and I mean, I can totally understand why it didn't fall in the Metal Gear, you know, like the main continuity and all that kind of stuff, like why it's its own game.
Yeah.
But I think it's, like, it's too unwieldy to really fit into that franchise.
Yeah.
You know, like, there are elements there that, yes, definitely make it feel like a Metal Gear game.
Oh, you know what would have been awesome?
But it's all the wrong elements. It's the stuff that annoys you about Metal Gear.
You know what would have been so awesome? If it was Shadow of the Ninja. And actually, something else. It's a better game than any of the Tecmo Ninja Gaiden games.
Oh, it is.
I will give it that.
It is, yeah. Oh, it's a great, like, I mean, it's not a poor game. It's just, as a representative of Metal Gear, like, you know, like, I can't...
And that's really the only people who I could recommend this to are people like me who were crazy about Metal Gear.
Yeah.
Right?
But even then, it doesn't feel like a natural extension. Like, I mean, it's just, even, like, you know, yeah, okay, you're playing as Raiden, but he doesn't feel like Raiden. He doesn't feel like Raiden's character. He's a different character than he was in, even in Metal Gear Solid 4. Like, it just feels like an unnatural extension of the franchise. You know?
With some great boss fights.
With some great boss fights. And some great action mechanics and stuff. Yeah. And, I mean, I honestly don't know of any other way that they could have done it, I guess, other than introducing another character or, you know, something like that. But it's just, I don't know. The one thing that constantly nags at me is that it just never really feels Metal Gear-ish. You know?
Hmm.
Downloadable costume for Grey Fox.
Yeah, I don't have that one.
Oh, I got that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Changes the whole game.
No, he still talks like Rod.
But he looks like Grey Fox.
So I just turn the sound off, and every time a cinema scene starts, I just go like, hit me again. I remember pain. Yeah, no, it's... you know, if you're a... are there even places left where you can rent video games anymore?
Yeah.
Yeah?
There's a few.
Yeah, so yeah, if you're a fan of action games,
and you live around the bay.
Local convenience store still rents them DVD games.
Nintendo tapes. Dave Johnson will love it.
Oh, yeah, I bet he would.
Yeah,
I bet he would, actually.
Yeah, Dave, you get to cut guys in half and tear out their spine.
There you go.
Bam.
Bam.
I'm into that.
You got time for that?
I got time for that.
Everybody got time for that. It's time for news!
The news, eh?
The news!
All the news that's fit to print.
And even some that isn't.
Filled with 11.
All the news that's fit to wipe your ass with.
If you're out of toilet paper.
Exactly.
But that's not fun, actually. It's no. Very... It's not good.
I can't say I'd know.
No, you've never?
No. If it's anywhere as bad as that, like, industrial brown paper towel roll stuff...
Oh, it's worse than that, because it's stiff, right?
Oh,
let's
okay.
not talk about this.
Haven't lived till you pooped in a bag and wiped with the newspaper.
It's gross, man.
So, of course, the big news this week...
Well, from 2 weeks ago.
It's from 2 weeks ago, but it's still big news. Everybody's still talking about
it.
Oh, Game Gosh, I'm sorry. Captain Trips. I was in a state.
Son of a
state of agony.
Personal weakness.
PlayStation 4.
PlayStation 4.
Which is called the PlayStation 4.
Thanks
even though,
be
even
to
though
Christ.
In Japan, 4 is an unlucky number.
Really?
Well, that's why they were saying it's probably not.
You know what else is an unlucky number in Japan? Mm-hmm. Sega.
So, I mean, of course, the details. We got an x86-based processor with 8 gigs of hyper-fast RAM. That was kind of a 1-2 punch to Microsoft because all the early specs were saying, you know, less RAM than the Microsoft system, but faster.
Right.
No, same amount of RAM and faster, you know?
Actually, I thought the biggest news of it was them apologizing for the cell processor.
It's not even that they apologized for it, really. It's just they basically said that, you know, this time out of the gate, we want a machine that everybody's going to be able to take advantage of right away.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you guys, but the big thing that I took away from the presentation, what I really, really liked... was how much they used the word or variation of the word gamer.
Yeah.
You know, constantly there was talk of the gamer, gamers, gamers, games, gamer. Like, it was constant throughout the entire thing. And that, to me, that tells me Sony's got their head in the right place.
It was kind of split between the word gamer and the word developer.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, big time. Big time. And, I mean, I'm... After seeing that, like, after seeing... the social aspects of it and how they got it tied into social media and stuff. I mean, your user profile now is essentially a Facebook page.
Yeah.
You know, it looks just like a Facebook page, which is really freaking cool. And you can actually post pictures and posts and video and all of that to your PSN page, like to your user page, which is, that's awesome.
Can you hook up the PlayStation Eye to take pictures of you while you're playing your game?
Yes.
I don't want that.
It comes bundled.
It comes with, yeah.
With this, essentially a sensor
camera.
Bar or Kinect. Actually, when I first saw that, I was like, oh, fuck off, Sony. What the fuck?
Mm.
You're doing what everybody else did already.
Yeah.
And that kind of pissed me off a little bit. I was like, no, don't do that. But hey, if it's bundled, whatever.
It's bundled, so they're not forcing you to use it like in any, you know, outside the ordinary. It's there for move backwards compatibility. And it also, like, the controller also takes advantage of it. The little blue light on the front of the controller actually works in a similar way to the Move. So,
blue if you're player one.
Yeah, yeah. But it's, you know, at least they're doing it intelligently. They're doing it like they did with Move, you know. They're not hitching their wagon to it. It's not the only show in town kind of thing, you know. You want to use it, it's there. You don't want to use it, you can blissfully ignore its existence.
Yeah, and in about a year or two, people will forget it even exists, and no games will come out to support it.
Exactly.
So, whatever.
Exactly. What odds? It's not like they're charging us extra for it that we know of.
Yeah.
You know, so... I love the social aspect of it. I love that I can go down through my friends list, and if they're using the share feature, I can, like, watch what you're playing.
I think that's
really
cool.
And then send you text messages or voice chat while you're playing.
Yeah, because, you know, Steve, like, I mean, you will take pictures with your phone of
stuff. We've been doing it, man, since Skyrim came out. We've been firing characters back and forth.
Screenshots back and forth. Yeah. But being able to do that, man, oh, man.
That's
awesome. So
what I love is, like, you know, sitting there watching one of the guys play Street Fighter, like, oh, got a little sloppy on that combo there.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we'll be playing Sleeping Dogs, and Larry will break one of Steve's records. You know, all of a sudden, be getting text messages. I want Balboa! I want Balboa! I'm coming for you, Soda Popinski!
Yeah. I also like how they use the streaming functionality. Like, I could be sitting here watching you play a game. You could get to a certain point where you hit a brick wall. You know, you could be like, okay, I cannot get past this. And I can be like, dude, I did it last night. and I can you can relinquish control to me.
Yeah, and then I can you do can, it. You can gloat about it then afterwards.
Yeah.
or I'm sorry to bring back Street Fighter. If I'm playing Street Fighter against online against the Bastard King of the Assholes, and he keeps cheaping me with the same goddamn Akuma combo, I can pass it on to someone more experienced than me. They can go pick Ken. Uncork the ass whipping of a lifetime.
It's cool, like, it's cool stuff. It's really cool stuff. But above all else, what really impressed me was the one thing that I did not predict happening.
Hmm.
I didn't expect as much of a jump, graphically.
Right.
I expected current generation in high def. You know, like, but what we got was... Well, maybe, and I mean, it's the old cliche, we hear it every time a new system comes out. Well, it looks just like a CG movie, but, you know? But,
yeah.
Man, that stuff did look like
pretty... The Killzone thing looks fantastic.
Unbelievable, man. And that Capcom one, Deep Down, the soldier with the fighting the dragon, did you see that?
Oh, yeah, that looked amazing. That
was... like, watching it, I thought it was a CG cutscene, and then you see the on-screen
I forget where I saw the comments. One of the major gaming sites, it might have been Penny Arcade, somebody said, I love the fact, and I'm not saying this negatively, because I truly believe it, I love that Demon's Souls has become a genre.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, Capcom kind of hitched onto that with Dragon's Dogma, and Dragon's Dogma was stellar.
Awesome game.
And I'm loving that they're going to keep, they're keeping with that stuff.
Yeah.
Something I really enjoyed, they showed off Killzone Shadowfall.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then, kind of like, the next night or two nights after that, in an effort, because everyone remembers the Killzone 2 debacle with the PS3.
Yeah.
They brought it onto Jimmy Fallon.
Oh, the same night.
Same night. Brought it onto Jimmy Fallon. Showed the developer, Jimmy, and Anthony Edwards all playing Killzone Shadowfall. It ain't CG this time, motherfucker.
I think we were right about Killzone 2.
Yeah.
About the end of Killzone 3.
Yeah.
About how Viserys is still alive. And
I was sitting,
he was setting them up.
As soon as that, welcome back, sir.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, I didn't do it in the lovable.
Welcome back, sir.
No, there's got to be more English in there.
Yeah, no, but the whole you see Vecta carved in half, and you see like the Helgan domain behind this big wall, and you know, like I'm thinking, what happened was, you know, the ISA got screwed because of nuking the entire surface of Helgan at the end of Killzone 3.
But they didn't do it; the Helgas did it. Well, the Helgas nuked it.
They did it by blowing up the spaceship.
Yeah. Wow! I just started playing Killzone 2 today.
See,
Killzone 2 and 3, so much shit explodes.
Just, yeah, they're both great games. They really are. And I think Shadowfall looks pretty awesome.
And if we get another awesome opening with Brian Cox doing a villain monologue,
yeah,
I'm all about that.
Yeah. And I got to say, I know nobody else in this room is interested in it, but I think Drive Club looks absolutely phenomenal.
Dude, I am interested in it because MotorStorm 1 and 2 were fantastic.
They were.
I'm not interested in it, but I could appreciate the tech. Man, that looked good.
Yeah. And, like, just the attention to detail and stuff. Yeah. I mean, I'm a car freak. I'm a car super freak. And that game looks... And, like, the idea of, like, the social interaction, being able to set up race meets and stuff like that. You know, like, having a bunch of people in their own cars show up at a race meet and stuff. You know, like that stuff is really cool.
Yeah.
A bunch of guys going online and living their life a quarter mile at a time.
Yeah. But, you know, like, games-wise, the software is there. I mean, you're looking at Killzone. You're looking at Watch Dogs has been confirmed to be a launch title.
Right.
And that looks amazing. Watch Dogs looks absolutely fantastic. We are getting a lot of, like, the same kind of stuff we saw at the beginning of this generation. We're getting, like, Assassin's Creed 4, which we'll get to shortly. I mean, that's going to be a PS4 and X-whatever title, you know.
New Infamous.
New Infamous, Infamous...
Second Son,
which I didn't know what to make of, to be honest with you.
Dude, I'm glad we got some more Sucker Punch.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure the gameplay will be great.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing they do amazingly well is gameplay, right?
I'm going to ask them to do one thing for me, because you gave them a beautiful out in the last game. No more Cole McGrath.
Yeah. And I got a feeling this is what it is, because like, it seems to me like this is the world that came to be after McGrath.
Yeah.
And this is, like, this kid you're seeing now, whether he's Cole's son or if he's just another character who's a powered character, you know, like...
What were they called again?
They had a name.
I don't remember. I haven't played the second one yet, actually. I'm really behind
that. Second one was good.
It was good, man. Yeah. It's a great DLC, man. The Devil's Night DLC with the vampire stuff was fucking hilarious.
Oh, Feast of Blood or whatever
it was? Absolutely hilarious. Because it's all narrated by your eldest buddy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, of course, it's all him exaggerating, then you play through what actually happened.
Cool. Yeah, I like those games. I really do. And I mean, Festival of Blood, yeah. But Sucker Punch being involved, I mean, I'll definitely play it. So the software looks to be there. I can't wait for most of it.
Yeah.
And I will be, like, as soon as pre-orders are being offered, I'll be laying some money down.
I can't wait to see what the console looks like.
We'll find that out. And I mean, that was something that a lot of people kind of bitched about.
Yeah.
But
I wouldn't bitch about it. I was disappointed, but yeah. I wouldn't bitch about it.
I kind of dug the whole, you know, more coming at E3 and a buddy just basically drops the microphone on stage.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, this is the thing, you know, like, it wasn't a big event. It was a press briefing.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't meant to be this big, you know, taking the wraps off. This was information. This was, this is what we're making. This is what we're working on. This is what it's going to do. Come back at E3 if you want to see it.
Again, it shows to me a little bit of a more mature, wiser Sony Computer Entertainment.
Yep.
Because let's just face it, PS3 launch, they got punched in the face pretty hard.
They did.
And I mean, they're playing a little more honestly now. There's not as much, because the PS3 was secretive, right?
Yep.
Didn't know what was coming, you know, it was a long time before we were getting tech specs.
But now this is the thing, Sony did the same thing with the PS3, and they're doing the same thing again now. And they did the same thing with the PS2.
Yeah.
They're not going out there saying, you know, we are the best and you gotta have us and whatever. They're coming out, they're presenting their own product, and they're letting you decide for yourself. But I think what it is, I think it's just people are that fed up now. Like, you look at the state of this current generation. I mean, the war is over now.
Yeah.
You know, all that's left now is ashes. Everybody who thinks that, you know, oh, Xbox 360 or PlayStation 3 or Wii, whatever, that war is over.
Yeah.
And the only people who lost were the gamers.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned. Microsoft made out like bandits. Sony made out like bandits. Nintendo made out like uber bandits, considering their machine was a castrated piece of shit from day one. You know, so it was...
That sounded pretty Seven Samurai there, man. We lost.
Oh, we did lose.
We always man. Lose.
The Wii fractured the user base and brought in a whole bunch more people, which drove sales and costs and whatnot through the roof.
It also brought us to this and then fucking shovelware bullshit.
Yes, all
we're
these fickle up. Idiots, all these hangers-on, took off again when they got bored with the Wii. But Microsoft and Sony were still busy trying to play catch-up with an audience that didn't exist anymore. So the only ones who ended up suffering in the end was the gamer.
Yeah.
It wasn't fit. I for one, cannot wait to see the final nail in the coffin of this generation. I can't wait to get back to just playing games and gaming consoles. You know? And I much as I am loath to give Nintendo any credit whatsoever, the Wii U was a step in the right direction there. It's not a gimmicky console. It's got features that are really cool, like this little touchscreen controller and stuff, if used properly. But it's not a gimmicky console. It's just about playing games. You know?
Yep.
Too bad they're getting shellacked.
Yeah, hey. Oh my god.
So, okay, we got the Wii U. PS4 has been partially unveiled.
We'll say two-thirds unveiled.
Two-thirds unveiled.
All that's left now is release date, price, and console.
Microsoft, ball's in your court.
And, I mean, if the rumors are true, if this whole Microsoft is still focusing on media delivery, and...
Yeah.
You know, boys, wake the fuck up. That's all I gotta say to that. Seriously, we don't care.
And you don't hear that on other video gaming podcasts.
No.
Boys.
Yeah, you don't. You also don't hear people slagging Microsoft very often either, but they need to wake the fuck up.
Yeah.
They really do. Get away from this frickin' interactive video channels and music services. And
What it feels
like... It's great to have that shit on your system as an ancillary thing. Like, oh, it can do it great. If you want to do it, go ahead. But Microsoft trumpets it like it's something special.
What really pisses me off the most about it is, you know, I had an Xbox 360 in early 2006. I didn't have it right away because, I mean, they were... I mean, the thing sold like hotcakes.
I had one right away.
Yeah, when it came out. It really did sell like hotcakes. Yes, and I remember the holiday season, like, all of us getting together. I mean, even playing stuff that you can't really go back to anymore, like, oh God, what was the first-person shooter where you beat hobos to death with Rebar?
Oh, Condemned.
Condemned.
Condemned criminal.
You know the CSI, the first-person shooter.
Yeah.
And with bomb fights. You know, we were all sitting out being utterly captivated by it, right?
Yep.
I feel like we all adopted this system, and, you know, Microsoft became this force for gamers. And then as soon as soon as, you know, they got to hang out with the cool kids, were pushed aside again.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was... I mean, I've beaten that drum on blast processing repeatedly. I feel like Microsoft abandoned me.
Yeah.
I still feel that to this day. Right now, I see no reason to own an Xbox 360 other than the fact that I have over 100 games for it.
Well, yeah, like, you got two full shelves there on the gaming shelf, full of 360 games. How many of them are recent? You got Halo 4.
And Hitman. Yeah. Everything else is like...
And really, did you buy Hitman because you had the last Hitman on 360?
That's why. Yeah. That's exactly why. Which is funny because I can't find my copy of Blood Money for 360 and now I have the trilogy on PS3. So, there you go. There it is, right?
Yeah.
And if I had my time back, I definitely would have bought it on PS3. I'd be after finishing that game now if I had bought it on PS3. You know? And, I mean, it was an amazing game. Absolutely phenomenal game. But it's just... I don't turn on my 360 for anything but Skyrim anymore. And now that I've got that on the PC...
Yeah.
Skyrim! I can't bring the news sheet back up.
The big... Other big news... Oh, what did I just make a mess out of? Okay. In other big news...
You'd have beaten us all to death for that.
Yeah.
Biggest news, I should say.
Biggest news.
Next to PlayStation 4, of course.
What's that?
Small potatoes next to the PlayStation 4, sir.
Ubisoft has announced Assassin's Creed 4.
Oh, yeah, that's big news.
Subtitled Black Flag.
Black Flag.
Which I think is a really fucking cool title.
I think it's a terrible title.
You know really? Who else thinks it's a cool title?
Why?
Because Black Flag is an insect repellent.
See, I never really remembered that.
Do you know what else it is? Henry fucking Rollins.
That's right, that's right. That's what I meant.
It's coming to current-gen consoles on October 30th.
Yeah.
All available next-generation consoles as well sometime this year. So whenever the PS4 launches, I can pretty much guarantee you there will be a copy of Assassin's Creed Black Flag bought with it by me.
Nice.
You know?
You know something I kind of dig? They're not going the route they did with Assassin's Creed 2 and having like this elaborate trilogy all based around... Right?
Yeah.
Based around Assassin's Creed 3. Yeah. But... It still kind of feels attached to Assassin's Creed
2. Yeah, well, I mean, it's a prequel to Assassin's Creed 2. Yeah. You play as Nathan Kenway, who is the father of Haytham Kenway, who was the father of Connor in Assassin's Creed 3.
Yep.
And you're a pirate slash assassin. You've got your own ship called the Jackdaw. You've got pretty much the entire East Indian Ocean roam around in.
Madagascar, best pirating waters on Earth.
You've got three full cities. You've got Kingston... Nassau and Havana. You've got pretty much an open sea world. Guys who've played it have compared it to Wind Waker.
Yeah.
There's a lot of exploration.
No loading times.
You've got a mechanic called the Endless Horizon or something like that they call it, where you can pull out your monocular and take a look, and every time you pop it out and take a look to see, like whenever you survey, there's always at least three activities. So you can rescue pirates from like deserted islands. You can sack merchant ships and stuff like that. You know, there's Mayan temples to be located on remote islands and stuff like this. It sounds absolutely freaking awesome.
And I think all three of us were in agreement that the naval stuff in Assassin's Creed 3 was
absolutely stunning.
Yeah, that's the best part of Assassin's
absolutely
Creed.
Like I know that I saw a lot of guys on our Facebook wall and everybody complained about it, but I mean it was something new. It was something games don't do that.
Yeah. I spread out those missions. I forced myself not to do them all right away.
Yeah.
So that I would have something to look forward to.
And I did them all pretty much as I could, which I thought it was really cool how they worked it into Assassin's Creed 3, how you had to reach certain landmarks before you could do more.
Right, right.
Which was the right way to do it. But I mean, now I'm to the point in AC3 where I've got them all done, and it's like,
Yeah.
I'm a little sad. I kind of wish you could just hop on the boat and sail, you know? Because the physics
and what happened?
At sea were amazing.
Ubisoft looked at the bug in your cat.
Yep. And said, hey. Seamless between land and sea.
Yeah.
And I think it just sounds really freaking awesome.
It does, man.
It sounds like a great game.
No ship-to-ship battle for multiplayer, though. No, so, multiplayer folks, I'm not one anyway, so it doesn't matter to me.
Nah.
But those folks are going to be a little
disappointed. So, that said, I got to say, I did try AC3 multiplayer a few times.
Yeah.
And it is, like... I mean, multiplayer doesn't blow me away anyway, but it is one of the more unique multiplayer games I've played. It's pretty good.
That's cool.
It's pretty solid.
So that is going to be a good game.
I can't wait.
You want to know what wasn't good? Videogamer.com issued word this week that EA, displeased with the performance of Dead Space 3, has shit-canned the series. There's talk of titles having to sell 5 million units. 5 million units.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Before EA will consider it successful. Electronic Arts, of course, has denied it all and claims that Videogamer.com is full of shit.
Thank God.
Was it Peter Moore himself?
Peter Moore himself actually had a great little Twitter response to these guys. I think actually he posted it in the comments section on their website.
He did. It was basically the electronic equivalent of him taking his glove off and slapping them in the face.
It was basically the equivalent of the electronic equivalent of EA taking a rogue website and flinging them under a bus.
Yeah.
I've read a lot of people slagging on this game too, man. Like when I read about this news, instead of reading sites and comments,
yeah.
And everybody hating on it.
Well, everyone like, actually, you know,
and what's hilarious is none of them have played it.
Yeah,
like, none of these people have played.
What did Dead Space 3 do to you? What did fuck your sister and take a shit on your chest?
Yeah,
seriously, it's awesome.
That's disgusting.
Beyond that, I mean, like you know, everybody they talk. What did they do?
But
they tie it into the microtransactions and all of this kind of stuff.
Right.
I was like, you don't. Need the microtransactions.
Oh, you know what?
Entirely ancillary.
If you don't go looking for them,
you'll never find them.
Yes.
I read this really cool comic strip this morning. It was only a one panel kind of thing. And it's all about microtransactions. And this old guy, and it's there with his son or whatever, complaining, oh, back in my day, we never had microtransactions. And then it flipped to him in an arcade. Getting quarters out of a machine and throwing them in. I'm like, yeah, well, guess what? It started with microtransactions.
Yeah.
You had to pay to play constantly.
Actually, yeah. I can remember, man. I can still remember in the mid-90s when, actually, it must have been the early 90s when NBA Jam came out. You know, you had to pay a quarter for every quarter of the game.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, really?
Or games that say you're low on health, insert coins. That was
Racing games, unless you made a certain spot fast enough, you had to put in another quarter.
Yeah. I mean, they were designed to be quarter munchers.
Yeah.
How is this any different?
No different at all.
It's not.
Except we got choice now.
Yeah.
We
can choose not to pay.
Yeah.
And I mean, Dead Space 3, there is never a point in that game where you suffer a detrimental failure because you failed to buy something with real money.
Yeah.
You know, like the game is entirely complete without having to take advantage of
it. Well, basically, it's like you're too much of a pussy to play the game with the way we designed it.
Yeah.
Well, here, we'll throw you a bone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like you want some cool exclusive weapons, you can pay for them.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. And it's just, it rots me.
Yeah.
It automatically, you know, like it's like they're doing some big wrong thing by doing it, you know, like by it's morally corrupt or something. How much did you pay for Call of Duty Elite there, Johnny Gamer? How much did you pay for your last downloadable map pack?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Like, it's been there as long as this generation of systems has been there.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, as a culture, and I'm going to call this a culture, the vast majority is focused way too much on the negative.
Yeah.
We think we're at the, you know, gaming as a hobby is in its teenage, it's late teens now.
Yeah.
You know, we're all listening to Nirvana. We're all
angsty.
Yeah.
But I've never seen so much rampant cynicism, and like we rise. I like to think that we, as a podcast, rise above that.
We rise above contrariness.
We rise
That's
above
the funniest thing I ever heard.
Not contrarianism.
Okay.
But we'll talk about Dead Space 3 taking a poop on your chest.
Cynicism.
Yeah.
Negativity. Like,
okay.
We hate something, we hate it honestly.
That's true.
You know,
yeah.
We do. We don't hate it because we're a bunch of hateful bastards. You know?
Except Nintendo.
Yeah. Well, no, I hate them pretty honestly. I got my reasons. I got my reasons for hating Nintendo.
Steve's mom went on a date with Nintendo.
Nintendo is going out with me tonight. I'm taking her out on a date.
She's going to have a good time.
EA had some other trouble recently. Especially this past week when SimCity was released.
Mm.
Which, I love those kind of games, and that one looked phenomenal. Looked really, really good. Server issues, basically, an awful lot. Because the game is, you have to sign in online to play it. You can't play it offline.
Yeah.
And they got hammered, and servers couldn't deal, and people were having to wait.
Well, they just,
like
days forget how popular SimCity was?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, something stupid like that.
See,
right?
And again, EA has been catching so much shit for this.
Yeah.
What happened when Diablo 3 launched?
Was it the same, eh?
What happened when World of Warcraft launched?
Yeah.
What was the Diablo thing? The Diablo, what was it called? error.
I can't.
It's execute error 67.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I tried to log in. I recently signed up for League of Legends.
Oh, God.
And tried to sign in to play my first game. I know. And I had to wait 5 minutes. I was on a queue. I was like number 2,000 something.
Yeah.
You know, and it just, you know, went down.
It's a situation, like, I blame the publishers to an extent, because, you know, these days when a game gets released, most of the traffic is in the first 6 months.
Yeah.
You know, 99% of your traffic is the first 3 months, first month. I mean, SimCity, it's a series that's been around forever. It's the first entry in, what, 6 years, seven years or something?
Yeah.
They should have known.
Yeah.
They should have been prepared. They should have had more servers up and running. You know, like, if you have the general rule, especially in a game that's always online, if you send a million copies to retail, you should have servers to handle a million copies.
Mm-hmm.
That simple, you know?
It's Las Vegas rules.
Yeah, Blizzard did the same thing. You know, Blizzard did the same thing with Diablo 3. They sent out 4 million retail boxes and had a server set up for 2 million people. That's just stupid.
Yeah.
That is dumb.
Yeah.
Especially at launch. You know, like, you know the game is going to be popular at launch.
Oh, yeah. And they've even addressed, which is something they didn't have to, but they even addressed the fact that they can't make it an offline game right now. It would be too, you know,
there's
the architecture.
Too much technology under the hood, and it's all designed. I mean, like, all of the economy models and stuff in it are designed for interaction with other players.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, I mean, you got guys commuting to your city to work and stuff like this.
Yeah,
which is hilarious.
Yeah. And, like, you can, you know, be getting power from a neighboring city.
Yeah.
Which is something, because I read about this on, I think it was on Penny Arcade again, actually. Or maybe it was another site where somebody, no, it was Kotaku, actually. I don't mean to quote those guys, but whatever. And how one guy, the two guys were playing together, and one was depending on power from the other fella, and he decided to quit to start a new city, which fucked over the other guy's city because of all his power dependency. He's coming from there, right?
Does this seem like a Hatfield to McCoy's style?
No. But anyway, so that was interesting. Anyway, EA is doing a good thing, and they're offering a free game,
which is pretty cool.
A free game on Origin or something, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Did they throw Maxis under the bus, though?
No.
Did with VideoGamer.com.
Actually, Maxis, they took the blame themselves.
Yeah.
Did they?
Maxis basically came out and said, we accept full responsibility.
Because
Maxis is one of the EA, it's one of their flagship studios. Yeah. They're pretty much left to their own devices.
Well, considering back in the day when EA was just strictly lower-end PC games, I think Maxis was their first developer.
Yeah, well, they were bread and butter. Maxis with SimCity and stuff was their bread and butter, right? Yeah. But yeah, it's a situation, they're in a similar situation to BioWare, where they're considered a banner studio, so they, you know, they have carte blanche, they can pretty much,
right?
You know, so I guess, yeah, they would take responsibility for it if they were ones responsible, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like the Dead Space thing where, you know, the rumor was that EA basically came in and told them they had to have the monetization and they had to have the transactions and they had to change the gameplay to match up more mainstream action games and stuff, which apparently one of the guys from Visceral said was 100% bullshit.
Right.
He basically came out and said, like, everything in that news story was a fabricated web of lies. You know? They still stand by their source, but everybody else has basically said they're full of shit.
EA wife strikes again.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what's been happening with SimCity recently. I would love to play the game, but I still hate having to play online. I'm not a multiplayer person anyway.
Nor me.
You know, that's one of the things I love about SimCity is making my little city, and just, it's my city.
Yep.
You know, I don't have to worry about anything else.
So. We're old school. To us, multiplayer is
sitting on a couch. Yeah, that's
yep.
right, the way it should be.
Yep.
Yeah, like playing Minecraft. Get your Xbox going on the go. Ugh, come on! My birthday's coming up. All I want for my birthday, Steve, is for you to play Minecraft with me.
On Xbox.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Remember that birthday you had a couple of years ago where we all played Street Fighter? That was awesome.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then Russ brought the greatest birthday gift ever.
I remember.
What was it?
He had his wife, fiance... hetero life mate? Wrap something questionable up and make it look like an actual prescription drug.
All right, I remember it. And let's turn off the microphone.
I go no further. We go no further. I won't sell Kevin.
Yeah, Kevin's got another game to talk about.
Yeah.
Okay, so I had a chance to play a little bit of Crysis 3.
Crysis 3.
Within this last hour. I've also had a beer. and I have never played any Crysis games before in my life. Neither did I have any interest in them, actually, at all. Probably because I don't have, like, a kick-ass PC, you know, that could...
Just so people understand, is Kevin is less inclined to enjoy robots as he is folk music.
Hold on. Back up the chug there. Folk robots.
Pull that bus over to the corner and pretend this is his turnpike.
I like robots just as much as the next guy. All right.
But not as much as I like Leonard Cohen.
I did play through Vanquish recently. Yeah. That was a good game.
About goddamn time.
I know it was, yeah. Crysis 3. Okay. What can I say about it? I mean, I didn't play for long. Only about 20 minutes. So you guys can certainly say more to it than I can. So these are virgin impressions that I'm going to give.
All right.
You like that expression?
I do.
I just made it up. Well, okay. Virgin impressions. I mean, with any kind of game like this, you need time to learn how to play it. And for me, sitting down for those 20 minutes, I got really frustrated really fast. Just because there's so much that they throw at you in terms of button presses. I mean, if you want to use grenades, it's a double tap on a button. Yeah. What the fuck? That's like, seriously.
I see, that was one of the things I actually liked about the game.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Oh, if I want to use this, I have to press this button twice.
You want
to
do a stealth kill?
What?
Solve this.
How many, where's the controller? How many buttons are on the controller? I'm sure they can come up with way.
The other thing they did do, and I mean, I don't blame you for this. I blame the game for not presenting it.
Right.
You can actually hold down the button and bring up like a menu that you can pick through
for weapons,
for other weapons and stuff.
Nice. See, I even did the tutorial,
and they never bring that up.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
And that charming British lady didn't tell you shit.
She did not tell me.
She just told
you
were in like the ultimate badass suit of killing and whatever else in a sexy British voice.
So that kind of annoyed me. The double tapping thing, not being able to see enemies on my HUD. Half of the time. It seemed like sometimes I could, sometimes I couldn't.
Yeah,
and I didn't know if that had to do with whether or not I wasn't in the right visor mode.
I think what it is, you got to go into the visor and you recon the area before you start going through. So if you turn on your visor, you start surveying the area, and as you see stuff, it appears on your HUD. And then you can turn off the visor and just go.
Right.
Which is, I think, is a pretty cool mechanic. But again, it wasn't really laid out.
Yeah, I mean, and for somebody like me who wants to play first person shooter and just shoot shit, that's probably not. I'm probably not the audience for that kind of feature. Slow down.
It's geared more towards people like me who like a little more depth in their shooters, I guess.
Yeah. I did love using the bow, though.
The bow is awesome,
and I would never get sick of that.
Awesome. That first guy you hit with, you folded motherfucker in half.
That was very, very cool. What else did I enjoy? Actually, I did not use the armor, the fancy armor, once during that first 20 minutes.
Yeah.
At all. I forgot that it was even an option.
And I think, again, that comes with being a Crysis virgin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I also missed that first cutscene. And I'm going to say it was a drag the way they worded it.
Yeah.
At the bottom of the screen it said, hold square to enter game.
So it made you think the cutscene's over.
Yeah, it made me think there was no cutscene. So it should have said, it was
press start to skip.
Yeah.
Is this an EA game? Yes. Yeah. EA should have said, press start to skip. That's what they should have had.
Yeah.
Because then I would know not to skip it.
It's a Crytek game published by EA, so it's not really owned by EA.
If Crytek, Kevin, I said it before, I'll say it again, they make games for a higher class of gamer. PC gamers. You guys can hit me now if you want.
I mean, there's a lot to like about Crysis 3. It's a beautiful game.
It's absolutely
gorgeous. Stunning.
Yeah.
I like that it goes back to the open world approach of the first game.
Yeah.
So, it is still a linear game. Let's not call a spade a spade. It is a linear game.
Yeah.
You know?
And that whole ruined New York thing, I mean, that's very original.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
It is gorgeous, but yes, it is also very original. Because we didn't see that 2 years ago with Enslaved at all.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I dig. I really dug it. It's gorgeous. I mean, the Rude New York stuff was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
The textures and everything. It, because the game moves so fast, unfortunately, you don't really get a chance to...
You got
to
kind of stop and soak it in.
You totally have
to. You really do, yeah.
Unlike Skyrim, where you can walk around and enjoy everything that you're seeing.
Especially on a high-end PC with mods loaded and it looks gobsmackingly gorgeous. Oh man. Awesome. I got to show it to you later.
I got to buy my own copy of Skyrim and go back to that, man. Got to.
My issues with Crysis 3 are a little more deep-seated.
Okay.
I don't really have a problem with the gameplay.
Right.
I'm cool with the armor abilities. I'm cool with how it's all presented and stuff like that, but I've been playing it since the first one.
Right.
My problem with Crysis is it's cool abilities, and I mean, it's a technical tour de force. It really shows off, you know, what the guys at Crytek were able to put together in terms of engines and stuff like that. But I find it severely lacking in personality. I find that, you know, the alien bad guys, the Ceph or the Self or whatever the frig they're called, they're bland.
Yeah.
They're completely uninspiring. When you see them in the original Crysis, when you're playing through the original Crysis, it's almost got like a Predator vibe to it. Because, you know, you're a commando unit parachuting into this Asian island, and when you see these aliens, it's done in like horror movie fashion. You know, they appear and they kill somebody, it's really gruesome, and then they're gone. So they're not just cannon fodder, but I mean, by Crysis 2, they turn into basically like the Covenant from Halo. Right. They're just bullet sponges, you know? And in Crysis 3, they're gone, there's only the remnants of them left. But it's, you know, they feel like Jurassic Park Velociraptors, they jump out of tall grass, you shoot them, you move on, kind of thing. And, like, the Cell Corporation? Really?
Yeah.
Really? You know, like, okay. It's just, and Profit, like, the whole, there's nothing there for me to latch onto.
I hated his voice. It sounded like he was talking to a tin can every time I heard his voice.
Yeah, that's because of the suit.
I know, but yeah. It annoyed me.
Yeah.
It really did.
I find him severely lacking in personality.
Yeah.
And I mean, I honestly... Again,
PC gamers.
Yeah. I honestly think, too, that Crysis 3, while visually beautiful, I do think it's the weakest of the series.
Right.
I do think it's a step down from Crysis 2 in terms of narrative and in terms of intro. Like, the intro to Crysis 2, man, talk about grab and hold.
Yeah.
You know, it really hooks you in. Because, like, I mean, it all starts off, you're just a normal dude, you're all in a submarine, and the submarine gets attacked, and it's gorgeous, absolutely beautiful. And then you're dragged into a New York City that's under siege by these aliens, you know? So it's, the whole game kind of moves like stink, and it's this, you know, constant battle for survival. And yeah, right. Sure, it's linear, and sure, it's broken in the stages, but it's constantly propelling you forward to a pretty damn cool ending. But then Crysis 3 starts, and it's like, it's the aftermath, and everything is just kind of, You know, it just doesn't have that same appeal.
Right, right.
And it's just like, the first game was, I had similar issues with the first game. It had a really strong opening, and when the Ceph do come into it, it's pretty cool. Like, it's done in a really cool fashion, but everything in between just felt like a slog. You know, like, it just felt like this, okay, another encampment, okay, moving on. You know, like, it was Far Cry 2 without everything that made Far Cry 2 interesting. Whereas Crysis 2 was just, it was a great first-person shooter. Great looking, great playing, really awesome levels, some really cool set pieces. Crysis 3 kind of falls more into that first game again.
Right.
So I guess, I mean, like, I don't hate it. I do enjoy the game. I think it's a pretty good game. I like the series as a whole, but it's not without its flaws.
Crysis 2 Longbow Edition.
Yeah, right? No, it's not, it doesn't have the same appeal to me as Crysis 2 did. I thought Crysis 2 was a fantastic game.
Okay.
And Crysis 3 to me was just kind of like, okay. Just, it almost feels like an obligation or something, you know? Like, yeah, we have to make a third one, so here it is.
Right.
That kind of thing. Kind of the same vibe I got from Halo 3. You know, right. Half-baked, I guess, is the gist of it.
Okay. Okay. It didn't hook me. I mean, you were there. I played 15 minutes of it, and I was ready to stop.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
For me, I had to show you the New York review.
Oh, yeah, that was very cool.
Because that is gorgeous.
I think it's a game that if I sat down and forced myself to play and got used to controls, I'd probably end up enjoying it.
Yeah.
But,
I think the beginning piece.
But do you have any desire to do so?
No, I probably won't go out and buy it tomorrow.
No. And, like, the whole thing with it, too, the pacing in the beginning is off.
Right.
That area that you go through to get into the, like, the new New York, or New York 2.0, as Psycho calls it.
Neo York.
Yeah. But, like, that area that you go through is a bit of a slog, too. Like, it's four or five all rooms of all similar size, chained together, full of bad guys.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, okay, I'm done shooting now. I want to get into the game proper, you know. And then when you do see New York, you get this really freaking awesome reveal and beautiful visuals. And then you walk in, and everything slows to a crawl again.
Yeah. Stay hidden, rocket launchers.
Yeah, you know, it's just kind of, and like, well, I mean, I've gotten considerably further than that. I think I was about 2 hours in, maybe a little over 2 hours, and apparently I was almost at the halfway point.
Oh wow!
So it's not a long game either.
Halfway point of the game?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So the campaign's only about, what, 4 hours,
Four and a half, 5 hours, apparently.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
They must have a multiplayer.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Crysis multiplayer at all.
Right.
It's just too ridiculous.
That is crazy short.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Crisis 3?
Crisis 3, there you have it.
You're a fan of the series? Go nuts. You know, you want something that'll really show off what, you know, your system can do. You want to play it on a 100-inch screen on your PS3 or your Xbox 360. It'll look stunning. I mean, it looks absolutely drop-dead, gobsmackingly beautiful. But it's kind of a soulless exercise, I think.
Yeah. If you're a virgin to the series, buy Tomb Raider.
So that's it for this week. That was our episode.
It was a good episode. I felt pretty good about it.
It's a good plan. I'm glad to be a part of it. So, what do we take away from this week, boys? What's our good?
Our good, bad, and ugly of gaming?
Yeah.
I think it's obvious what our good is.
I think it's obvious that our good... I think we can all unanimously agree. Good.
Lara Croft.
Tomb Raider.
Tomb Raider. I haven't even played it yet, but I agree so much with your guys' opinions.
Kevin, you like the bow in Crysis?
Oh, yeah.
The bow in Tomb Raider dominates it.
Oh, okay. I tried to cross a rushing stream of water by going from, like, wooden poles stuck in the ground from one to the next. One of them tears loose. I get rushed down this big, crazy, torrential stream. I go down over a cliff. I land inside the wreckage of an old World War II Japanese bomber on the bubble turret from the tail gun. As she's reaching out to grab, like, the parachute that's hanging there because she looks down and sees all the glass cracking. Of course, the glass gives way. You're in total free fall. Gets the parachute open. It rips. Backup chute. Okay, that worked. Then you're guiding her through, like, mountainous trees trying not to, like, impale yourself on it. And it all looks stunning.
Man, that's fantastic.
It's absolutely stunning. It is so ridiculously intense and captivating. Actually.
Yeah. All the set pieces are just absolutely heart-stopping.
And there were a few, like, jump moments. There were a few moments where I literally, like...
The first time I was out, ran into the woods after I met up with some survivors, set up a base camp. Lara gets herself patched up a little bit and gets something to eat. One of the guys goes ahead to scout, and he radios her and tells her he's found something. So I was like, doo-doo-doo, little trot through the woods, and then bam, wolves jump out.
Yeah, wolves just there jumping. Yeah. And, like, how it goes to slow motion, and you see all the trees rustling before they jump out. Oh, amazing.
Cool.
Absolutely right. Amazing.
So good. Two thumbs up.
The bad? Yeah.
The bad is something we actually didn't touch on, but they recently released the price for the first unofficial kind of Steam box coming. They're calling it the Piston, I think. $1,000.
Pissed on.
Yeah. there's a lot of nerd rage happening online right now. People saying, oh, I could build a way better PC for half of that hooked up to my TV. Yeah. It sounds like you're really just paying for the convenience of a little small box that you can hook up, you know?
Yeah.
It's still an awful lot of money, my goodness.
I just think, you know what? I think people are finally starting to wake up and realize that Valve is all smoke and mirrors.
Mm.
You know? I think it's finally starting to happen. Thanks be to Christ.
Yeah.
And are ugly.
Yeah. And especially with the Uwe coming up.
The Ouya.
Ouya. Uwe.
Ouya.
The Ouya. You know, I mean, God, what would you rather spend the cash on to play some games on your...
$100 Android console or a $1,000 Valve console?
Yeah.
Hardcore, they'll go for the Valve.
Yeah.
Gabe Newell swims in money.
He does.
Maybe. Like Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah. And when he goes to the bank, the bank teller is like, why does this money smell like Crisco? I can't believe I said that. I'm horrible.
Oh, God. Okay, so that's
okay,
our bad.
Okay, so no. Yeah, that's our bad.
I think that might have also been borderline ugly.
No, our ugly this week has to be the... we're living in the death of good video game journalism.
When sites like videogamer.com can post stories like that... You know what? I'm glad that a studio has finally come out and basically called shenanigans.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really glad that someone with some clout has come out and said, you know, like, you know what, these guys are full of shit.
Well, the worst thing about it is there's only so much gaming news that comes out per day. Yeah. I mean, there's still a good amount, but these sites are all fighting for hits, right? Yeah. So
we have aggregates then, like N4G.com, newsforgamers.com, and a lot of these guys now, they N4G has brought in icons to demonstrate, like, what you're looking at, whether it's an opinion piece or a news piece or an article or paid revenue or, you know, like that.
Well,
kind
they
of
had
stuff.
To, otherwise I was going to buy a plane ticket, fly down, and start punching someone.
Yeah, because, I mean, how much stuff was it? Oh, 10 reasons why Sony's going to lose the next generation, or 10 reasons why Microsoft is going to lose, you know, and it's just, it's all opinion pieces, and people are clicking on it and thinking that some freaking 16-year-old idiot with a blog over in Eastern Europe somewhere typing about something he doesn't know shit about is news all of a sudden. oh, the PlayStation 18 is going to have X million gigaflops of data power, and you know, like
Google flops.
Because some idiot on a blog said so.
Yeah, and it's just this is what killed Kotaku for me.
Yeah.
Right. And I think maybe it's just we're at the point now where a lot of the guys, you know, who were writing for these websites who had experience writing for gaming magazines have all moved on, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's still a few guys out there that I still will follow and I will read religiously.
Yeah.
Marcus Beer, I'm down with Marcus. Marcus is...
Is that the
Annoyed Gamer? Yeah. He is fantastic. He is absolutely fantastic.
I just assume that everything I read is an opinion piece.
Yeah.
Unless there are specs or dates. And then I take it with a little bit
or more at the bottom, there's two paragraphs donated to the parent companies.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like
exactly.
At the bottom, it's like, Sony Computer Entertainment is a company formed in... You know? Press releases.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, you know, when these sites, when you're... It's bad enough that you guys are covering cosplay conventions, but when you start just throwing rumors and hearsay and bullshit that you pulled out of your rear end...
Hearsay based on, like, untested sources is the big thing for me. You know, like, hearsay... I mean...
Okay, I mean, look what happened on our... I'm not going to say... Because our Facebook page got, what, 100-something likes?
Yeah.
You know? We're small time. We posted a link to that that Dead Space story.
Yeah.
Our fan base lost its fucking mind.
Oh, too bad. So they just blew up.
Yeah. Yeah. Just... We went apeshit.
Yep.
Rap music started to play. Furniture was thrown around.
And, I mean, it was bullshit. It was a story that, you know, really elicited strong reaction. 5 million copies. Really?
Yeah.
You know, but in the end, it all comes out that it's horseshit. You know, and I mean...
And I get angry then. I feel really angry because I'm like, you made me feel like an idiot.
I don't even mind that. I don't even mind the fact that you made me feel like an idiot. But the fact that they're passing it off as... From a trusted inside source, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, like, and then EA's only comment on it was we don't comment on rumors and speculation, which should have been very clearly stated in the original story that they did contact EA, and EA just basically said we don't comment on rumors and speculation. Because then we could have known that, well, it could be horseshit, it might not be horseshit. Mm. But the way they passed it off was they passed it off as legit, genuine. This shit happened.
Yeah.
And then, of course, other news articles like Eurogamer, who, for me, are a very, very trusted source, picked it up as news.
Yeah.
You know, because Eurogamer are usually above this kind of bullshit.
Yeah. I think it ended up on IGN.
Oh, it did end up on IGN. Yeah, it ended up everywhere. Once Eurogamer posted it, everybody got it.
Yeah.
You know, but it's one of those things that it shouldn't have happened.
No. Yeah.
It should not have happened. And I'm so glad that, you know, someone called shenanigans. I'm so glad that, you know, guys from Visceral have been adamantly denying it. And then, of course, Peter Moore throwing videogamer.com under a bus. You know?
And when Peter Moore does it, it sounds classy.
Yeah, because he's British.
Yeah.
Everything sounds
classy. He looks like a James Bond villain.
Yeah.
So, well, I hope he rolled up his sleeve and had a videogamer.com sucks tattoo all of a sudden.
So that's it. That's our episode for this week.
I thought it was a good episode.
I thought so too. I hope you guys agree. If you don't, well, too bad. If you do, hey, keep listening. Send us feedback. We like feedback.
Yeah, post.
We haven't
like
asked
Facebook
for
page.
Feedback in ages.
No,
we got a Facebook page. We're over on DVDverdict.com in the jury room. We're on iTunes. We're on Podbean now. We're everywhere you want to be.
Except like on a bus advertising kind of shelter thing.
We could do that.
Could we do that?
We could totally
do that. I sit on buses all the time wearing a blast processing t-shirt.
I think we should do up like bumper stickers and just stick them everywhere.
Yeah, that's cool.
I think we should go viral.
Like that Kony 2012 campaign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, we are out of here.